Blog Talk Radio.
And we can just get together as women and the men who love them and join forces, flex our muscle, and demand change. Are we ready to demand change? Are we ready to go to Washington and march on Washington and say, enough! Enough with the violence against women! Are we ready? I'm joining Soroptimus when I get back to New York. I told Rozzy, I said, you're joining, right? You're going to join? We've got to get other women together, and we've got to use this framework as the basis for organizing to demand change. This is not being discussed as a culture. We're discussing terrorism, we're discussing health care, but the thing that hits us closest to home, the psychological burqa that I and every other woman in this country has to wear when we walk down a street or when we walk our dogs or when we put our kids into a school bus, nobody is talking about that. We're pointing the finger at other countries, and we're living in fear as women here in the United States.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Voices for Justice tonight, February 17th, 2010. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and I am so thrilled that our friend Jane Velez Mitchell will be with us shortly, host of Issues on HLN. She'll be taking your calls in a little bit. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. Again, that number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Sign on by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Tonight, one media diva is making a difference in the world. She's a force to be reckoned with. Jane Velez Mitchell takes your issues and brings them to her national audience each and every night, 7 nights a week, on her show, Issues on HLN. This media diva is constantly having a voice for children, animals, and women. And no matter what the story is, she stays neutral, honest, and always looks for justice. She is a voice for justice, and we are so thrilled and honored to have her with us this evening. Jane, are you here?
I am, Michelle, and it's great to be on with you.
Well, welcome, welcome. Long time no see. I think the intro everyone was listening to was part of your acceptance speech on January 9th here in the Portland area, and we know that hopefully you'll be back sometime soon because I know that your voice is very strong nationally, but in Portland you definitely made an impact with the human trafficking, and we'll touch on that in a little bit, but I think we...
Well, congrats to your conference. Your conference opened up a lot of eyes and minds to this whole problem. I didn't know the extent of it until I went to receive that award at this Northwest Anti-Trafficking Conference that you organized, and I was blown away by the extent of human trafficking in the United States. We all like to think of it as a foreign problem that happens in Asia or Latin America, but it's happening right here in the United States.
It's happening every day, and unfortunately, unless we have people like yourself that takes a show and uses your celebrity to have a voice, especially what you've done for women and the war on women on your show, it's not going to slow down. We need more of you, and hopefully with programs like that and also shows like yours and Nancy's and all of the great work that CNN and Headline News does, that we'll continue to keep those stories out there. But we want to talk to you a little bit tonight. We have so the switchboard is lit up, so I hope you're ready for questions.
I'm ready. Hit me with
let's
the best
start
shot.
With your book.
Fire away.
Fire away, okay. Let's talk about your book for a few minutes. Folks listening, if you want to learn more about Jane and her long bio, go to cnn.com/Jane. But for her book, I Want, visit janevelezmitchell.com, and you can get all the information on this wonderful book. But
or just go to Amazon and order it.
Amazon. That's Amazon right there. I want.
With a little I.
With a little I and a capital W, correct?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You can just put I want in there.
Okay. All of us have issues. Every single one of us, especially in today's society. Everybody has an issue. Everybody has had some setbacks in their life. But you in particular, and I hope I don't butcher this quote, but in your book, you say, make a mess into a message. And you have had, you know, an extensive life. You've done a lot for journalism. You've done a lot for women and children and animals. But you've also overcome a lot to get to where you are today. And I wanted to see if you'd talk a little bit about that journey because so many people listening that can identify with you.
Well, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and this April, if I hang in there, knock on wood, I'll have 15 years of sobriety, and that's a real miracle because I was a person who couldn't go a day without drinking, and I would make all sorts of promises like the typical alcoholic and never live up to them. And eventually, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, and that's the hardest thing because we like to think we're in control of our lives, and yet I would make all sorts of vows and try to exert all sorts of willpower, and nothing. By the end of the day, I would always succumb to the drink. And so finally, I got it, and I hit bottom, and I got into recovery, and I thought, wow, my problems are over. But the fact is that addictions jump from one substance to another. So I had to start looking at other things because I had never really cared about food. Then suddenly food became important, which is very common with people who get sober. Sugar became important. My addiction jumped to sugar and began having these intense sugar cravings. And so I had to then deal with that. And in the course of dealing with the food issue, I went vegan. And that means I don't eat animals and I don't wear them and I don't use products that are tested on them. And I call that my second miracle. My first miracle was getting sober. None of the other things that happened after that would have ever happened, the positive ones, if I hadn't gotten sober. I say my second miracle was going vegan because really I have the joy of going through it every day knowing no matter what happens, I'm in winter because A, I'm sober, and B, I haven't killed to get through this day. And that is a huge psychic shift that occurs once you start looking at the world through this sort of peaceful lens where you're practicing peace with your decisions on a moment-to-moment, day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis. So that's been a huge boost, and it also helped me deal with my food addiction. I wouldn't say I was a food addict as much as a sugar addict, and I learned about healthful ways to get sweets into your diet, whether it's agave or maple syrup. These are naturally processed sweets, fruits, nuts, that you can whip up into a delicious sweet-tasting dessert, but it doesn't give you that kind of sugar rush that the processed sugar gives you, and that's so bad that really is an addiction just like alcohol. And so that was an amazing miracle in my life. And then after that, I still had issues, and I wondered, what was I trying to stuff down so much that I constantly would jump from one substance to the next? And that was my little chihuahua. Come on, honey. You don't have to bite. I have three of them, mixes, rescues. And I was going to my psychiatrist along with working my recovery program, and I finally had to admit that I'm gay. And that was something I kind of knew deep in my subconscious for many years, but I had stuffed it. I think I'm living proof that homosexuality is not a choice. I chose to be heterosexual. I was heterosexual in action, but not really deep down inside. I mean, I tried it all. I got married. Luckily, my ex-husband and I are still good buddies. I really worked hard to try to be heterosexual, but at the end of the day, when I couldn't hide behind my alcohol, because my alcohol was gone, and I couldn't then hide behind sugar, I had to get real about my sexual orientation, and that's my third miracle, because now I have this tremendous relief of, okay, I'm just who I am, and I don't have to pretend anymore.
Well, with the addiction situation prior to becoming in your sobriety, were you as passionate about the stories that you would cover as a reporter as you are now?
I don't think so, because I think that when I got sober, I really had a spiritual conversion. It's kind of like being born again, but not so much in the religious sense. It's like you really feel like you are just reinventing yourself completely, especially in terms of your values. And when I was drinking, I thought of myself as a good person, but I was really about me. I was, what's in it for me? What can I get out of this situation? I was ambitious. Then when I hit bottom, I had to work my recovery program, and I learned a whole bunch of new tools, like being of service, like humility, all these things that I was not that familiar with. I mean, I knew the word humility, but I didn't understand the word humility. And they say in recovery, you can either find humility or you can be humiliated. And I was humiliated with my drinking, so I really embraced humility when it was that point where desperation makes you really think, I'm going to try anything. And boy, humility is a beautiful thing. And whether it's being of service to another recovering alcoholic or somebody else in need or an animal in need, it's really a tremendous source of joy to be of service, which I never realized until I got sober.
You know, you mentioned in regards to service and what you do for being an animal activist. And watching your show the other night, I'm not sure who you had on, but they were referencing a criminal as an animal. And I guess that's society for you. They're more like monsters in my mind. But you kept on saying, no, animals wouldn't do this with each other. And just
right.
That little statement, I think, goes a long way. It's almost like the Bob Barker of getting your pets spayed and neutered. You know, that little word out there makes people think twice about what we do to each other and what we do to animals.
Well,
you know,
words are
you
important.
Met bundles, and you know,
yeah.
It's like...
Oh, you have the most beautiful dog, Michelle, and I carried him around for hours.
Luckily, he's still alive. He almost died a week and a half ago, but... You know, for me, it's, you know, being an animal activist, it goes further than just saying I love dogs. You tend to do that with a lot that you put your hand in, more so than a lot of us. I mean, like being an environmentalist, you know, how many of us consider every time we pull a paper towel, you know, things of that nature.
Right. Well, I've had to learn a lot of stuff, and I still haven't. Achieved anywhere near perfection on my environmental record, but I think it's about first becoming conscious of the impact of what we do. So many people are behaving unconsciously, and that's where I was able to use the steps. I started doing an inventory of my consumption and writing down everything I bought or used or ate for 3 or 4 days, and I urge everyone to try this. I'm talking about every plastic cup, every plastic fork, every thing that you would buy and throw away or buy for whatever reason. And I found that I was a hurricane of consumption, of overconsumption. And a lot of the things that I thought I needed, I really didn't need. And it just really put in stark relief how I could do things in a more environmentally conscious way instead of always going to Starbucks and getting the paper cup with the plastic cap on it and then usually double wrapped within the cup with the warmer and all of this stuff. I could get my own cup, and I started doing that, and I go to Starbucks sometimes or take it wherever I go in my backpack, and people joke with me, they call me Dora the Explorer, but you know, I got my little backpack and have my cup in there. I have a bamboo fork, knife and spoon and chopsticks that I got from Patagonia that I carry in my purse, and I use them all the time. And just that one action, boy, the amount of plastic that I've reduced and gotten rid of in my life is amazing. And that plastic, one of my particular pet peeves is plastic bags. And I was at the airport coming back from L.A. just this weekend, and this woman was in front of me at the counter, and she said she had two plastic bags that she had put various things that she had bought, not a lot of things, like, I don't know, maybe a newspaper and a couple of other things. She'd already put them in two plastic bags. She goes, I want to consolidate, and can I have another plastic bag? So the guy gives her another plastic bag, and I said, wow, three plastic bags. I looked at her. And I said that. I didn't say what I wanted to say, which, you know, was a little harsher, but I bit my tongue. I just made an observation. I said, wow, three plastic bags. And she just gave me the filthiest look and, you know, ran off, because I think she knows what I'm saying is those plastic bags, each one of them is going to last 1,000 years. And they are clogging the coral reefs. They're killing our coral reefs. Animals are getting trapped in them in the wild. Anybody who is turned on TV in the last half a decade or gone on the internet knows these bags last 1,000 years. And yet people will use them without thinking. And if you try not, if you try to urge people, like on a checkout line, to maybe not use them, there's a lot of anger. And that's addiction. Addiction is, the hallmark of addiction is defiance. I'm going to do it my way. Mind your own business. Unfortunately, it's all of our business, because it's our planet that's being destroyed by this behavior. So that's another reason why I went vegan. The United Nations did an in-depth study and found that meat production is the single biggest cause of global warming, far beyond transportation. So you can drive a hybrid, which I used to until I moved to New York and don't need a car. Or you can use those nice light bulbs that are environmentally correct, but none of it's going to have the impact that reducing the meat that you, the amount of meat in your diet, reducing the amount of meat in your diet or eliminating it is the single biggest thing you can do to help the environment. The destruction of the rainforest is primarily to create grazing land for cattle or to create grazing farmland to produce feed for cattle. And now we all care about children, right? We care about the fact that there are 10 million children that die of starvation or malnutrition in the world every year. And there's, it's some horrible figure, like every couple of seconds, one of them dies. Well, we're resource hogs by eating all of the meat that we do in the United States, because the amount of grain that it takes to feed one cow could feed an entire village. If you took that grain directly to people, you could wipe out world hunger overnight just by eliminating meat from our diets. So when I read about all this, and a number of people are writing about this, there's a wonderful book by Jonathan Safran Foer called Eating Animals. There's many, many books, Food Revolution. When you hear this very clear and compelling evidence that this is destroying our planet, and on top of that, the cruelty of the factory farming is beyond comprehension, I think it's our moral obligation to say, you know, we've got to do it another way.
You know, you mentioned being a vegan and you know, not eating animal products. One person you were able to really get to like that vegan cheesecake, Dr. Dale Archer. he's addicted to that. So you were able to bring somebody over to the other side. So.
I do it every day.
I think we had a whole table full that night. Except Rosie. I think we have to still work on Rosie Franco. But
look, I'm not passing judgment on anyone. It's a process, not an event. The first step is to get out of denial and start looking at where this food really comes from. And you can go on the internet, go to PETA. It's unbelievably cruel what's happening with factory farming. Do you know that pigs, which are higher, they have a higher IQ than dogs, they're kept in crates the size of their body, never able to turn around. Those are called pig gestation crates, and they become psychotic. If you did that to a dog for 2 or 3 days, you'd be charged with animal cruelty. These pigs spend their entire lives like that. Cows, dairy cows, have their tails ducked, just chopped off without anesthesia. Finally, Governor Schwarzenegger banned it in California, but it's happening in New York, and we're working to try to get that banned here. And there's nobody to enforce. There's so few animal protection laws involving the vast majority of animals in this country and in the world are food animals. 10 billion are raised and killed for food every year in the United States. And there is virtually no oversight. The USDA, which is supposed to look after animal safety, actually represents the food manufacturers. So it's the fox guarding the hen house. They look the other way. That's why you have those undercover investigations that come up all the time with the downed cows and, you know, the horror stories of the cows swimming in their manure. And it's not good for people. One of the reasons why we're getting swine flu and mad cow disease and all these other illnesses and the E. coli poisonings that are causing these massive beef recalls, because these animals are raised in such horrific, filthy, filthy, filthy conditions. And don't take my word for
it. Why is it more money to eat healthy than it is to eat meat and byproducts when in reality they don't have to add anything to that. So
because the U.S. government subsidizes cheap, unhealthful food, which is the untold story of this entire healthcare debate. The Agriculture Department is more responsible for the ill health of Americans than the Health Department. The Agriculture Department, because it's controlled by the food industry and agribusiness, pumps in untold billions in subsidies to agriculture. That means that they can produce cheap grain and they can feed a lot of cows. So without the subsidies, the price of a hamburger would be at least $12. But we're churning out dollar hamburgers that's making people obese. Obesity is now threatening to surpass smoking as the nation's number one preventable killer. And it's all because of this cheap calories that have been unleashed on the American public because of the Agriculture Department. So while on the one hand, President Obama is going on and on about health care, on the other hand, the policies of the U.S. government is what's creating a lot of the illness, because whether you're talking about cardiovascular disease, high cholesterol, obesity, type 2 diabetes, all of this is food related. And those are the things that are pushing up our healthcare costs. So do we cut the subsidies to agribusiness? No. Why? Because the lobbyists are in charge of our government.
Good point.
The government's completely broken. And I agree with Senator Bai. Honestly, I think it's broken. We've hit bottom.
I think we both agree also the justice system is on the verge of being completely broken, too. Tell us a little bit about, the journey writing this recent book. I know many of you listening tonight may have read Secrets Can Be Murder, which is also a great book. But with I Want, how difficult was it to actually dig a little deeper into your soul in order to make the book? And has it made you a better journalist and an advocate in the success of writing it?
Well, I'm very pleased with how the book turned out. It made the New York Times bestseller list, which makes me happy. But the thing that makes me the happiest is that people were really moved by it. And I constantly get letters from people who say they've changed their diet. They've gotten a chance to deal with their alcoholism. They've given the book to somebody who's suffering from alcoholism and it's helped them get sober. So many people out there are suffering from alcoholism or drug addiction. And my feeling was, why waste a good problem? I struggled for years to get sober. And I had a miracle. The first time I walked into recovery, the obsession to drink was lifted. It was a miracle, truly. And I wouldn't want anybody else to have to wait as long as I did, trying to figure it out on their own. There are programs out there. With a click of a mouse, you can find them. And they're happening all over the United States and the world, every hour of the day. You can get the help you need. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to suffer humiliation. You don't have to risk your life. It's a fatal disease, and you can kill yourself and you can kill others, and it's misery. So I was very pleased that people said they did get something out of it. Excuse me.
Any intention of possibly diving into a self-help website or one of those self-help support programs that, like, the Oprahs have established, where people follow her and they list diets, or like Rachel Ray?
Well, let's face it. I love Oprah. I'm a big fan, but diets don't work, and she's living proof of it. The only thing that works is a lifestyle change, and that's why for me going vegan was very powerful, because it's not a diet; it's a way of life.
So you have
and it's guilt-free eating.
Do you have any, aspirations to, possibly have that kind of network online for people to start following you and maybe being more of a support system on a national level?
I'm writing another book about addiction, so that'll be out hopefully in the spring of next year, in approximately a year. And I'm going to try to take a look at all these problems. I wrote the I Want. It was my own personal struggle. This is going to be more my observations about the things that we're talking about tonight. And I do have a very powerful website. It's called cnn.com/Jane. And we put a lot of stuff up there. And in fact, if anybody's interested in finding out more about animal issues, if you don't want to go to PETA, just go to cnn.com/Jane. And I have a little segment there, the section says Man versus Nature. And I have some of the stories up there. But they don't tell the real story because what's happening to animals is so gruesome, we can't show it to you. That's the horror of it. And if you go to the actual sites like Mercy for Animals, which just did the undercover investigation into the dairy farm in upstate New York that was pulling out cows' horns, you know, with just unbelievably cruel methods. This is torture. There's no other word for it. And, of course, denied it, and the DA refused to prosecute it, which happens all over the country. The powers that be refused to accept that there's anything illegal or wrong with it, even though it's torture and it's endangering not only animal health but human health. So the law enforcement system has a long way to go when it comes to enforcing animal protection. And this is a consumer issue. Let me tell you something. If everybody listening tonight said, you know what, this makes me sick, I'm not going to eat this stuff, boy, they would start changing very, very rapidly how they do business.
Well, that's a good segue into my next question. It's doing everything in my power not to talk about the major headlines going on right now with you, but we do have a couple folks on the line I know that will have questions. Regarding your position as host of your own show, Issues on HLN, how does the stories and the news affect you personally? Recently you mentioned at the conference Morgan Harrington, and her remains had not been found when you made that comment. They have today. And when you were talking, I saw Walter Cronkite delivering the news about the president, you know. And so you see a journalist in a different aspect when all of a sudden they're talking and the camera's not rolling, and you see, really, you've got heart and these stories bother you.
I think the ones that bother me the most are the parents who don't know what happened to their daughter. As horrific as the Morgan Harrington story is, even her own father said, at least we don't have to imagine the worst 24/7, 365. But there are other cases, like the Kessies, whose beautiful daughter Jennifer, doing nothing wrong, hardworking, beautiful young lady, getting ready to go to work, vanishes off the face of the earth, and they have no idea what happened. There's no clue. Literally, there's one shot of a guy who parked her car, but unfortunately, the security camera obscured his face because he was walking behind a series of poles, so you don't see his face, and you just see this guy in a cap, and they have no idea what happened to her, and they are living in hell. And I interview them every couple of months, and they say, you know, it only gets worse, and they've stuck together. A lot of times it destroys the marriages. That's what I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night, and I wonder, how are these people doing it, and what can I possibly do? And we just keep the stories alive, you know, just try to do them over and over again, because one day somebody might come forward. And, you know, look at that Madeleine McCann. First they accused the parents of being involved, and those parents, hell. And that was happening over in Portugal. But it doesn't matter where it happens. The parents, you know, a child disappears, and I can't even imagine. I really can't.
It is difficult. 2 days ago, I think I sent you the posting. A skull was found in a book bag in California.
Yeah.
And so now we're just waiting for the DNA testing to see if it's any of the cases we're working on out there. So today's been a difficult time. But for the listeners on, I know we have a lot of people on hold, 347-838-8622. If you are online to ask Jane a question, please hang up and call back and make sure you go into the host queue, because otherwise there are people that are just listening because they're in their car and not in front of a computer. So again, 347-838-8622. I want to play something for you. This was also something that transpired at the conference. You recently attended, again, the Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking that Seroptimus hosts each year. For our listeners, Jane was awarded our Ruby Award honoree for being the best for women. And I want to play something right now.
And if women don't start talking about it, they ain't going to talk about it. You know that. But we're still doing the male dialogue. And we're talking about all these political issues. Let's set the agenda, women. Are we ready to set the agenda? And I love this lady right here, the head Seroptimist. And I'm going to work with the head Seroptimist. And we're going to go and we're going to put her on issues and put some of these other people doing this amazing work on issues. And we're going to do everything we can to be part of the solution and to move this world forward. This is more than just a specific issue. Really, we're talking about evolution and compassion for the powerless, which is really the litmus test for a society's level of evolution. And so I ask all of you, as you feel compassion for women and children, please expand that compassion as well to animals. Let's speak for the voiceless. Thank you very much.
Again, that was from January 9th here in the Portland area. Why is being a voice for women and children and animals so important to you, and to utilize that time that you do have, 1 hour a night, to making sure that gets heard?
Well, there was a time not so long ago when women didn't have a voice at all. My mom is turning 94 on Sunday, and when she was born in 1916, women did not have the right to vote. They got it soon after, but that is something that I always think about, how far we've come in less than a century. And let's face it, a lot of women take these privileges and rights that we have for granted. And they don't realize, I don't think they realize in the post-feminist world that it can be taken away from us, too. We have tremendous power as a gender, but we don't flex it. We don't really unite as a gender anymore the way we used to during the days of, let's say, Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem. And what we need to do is create a new age of feminism where women of all political stripes, this is not about politics, it's about beyond politics, gather together and say, hey, we want to be safe when we walk down the street. And I think that's got to be a number one priority. But is it a priority of the government? No. I mean, you just had this case the other day where this woman begged the judge for a restraining order against a guy who was harassing her.
Yeah.
For a long time, she presented 72 pages of evidence, and the judge said, I don't know if this is a real stalker. I'm going to hold a hearing, and I'm going to let the stalker know, and he can come to the hearing and tell his side of the story. Well, what happened? The stalker went and killed the woman before the hearing could happen. That's what I'm talking about. If that was a female judge, that judge might have understood what it's like to be stalked, because so many women have been stalked. I know I have, and it was not a pleasant experience, and I would never wish it on anybody.
Ann Pressley.
Yeah, I mean,
wasn't that the reporter that was being watched or stalked and
no, she was just. It was even more horrific than that. Tennessee anchorwoman, beautiful, beautiful Ann Pressley, beautiful woman, good-hearted, does everything right, never gets into trouble, really goody two shoes. She's at home by herself. Guy bursts into her house, rapes her, and bludgeons her to death. Her mother discovers her. This happened in Tennessee. That's what I'm talking about. You know, there's this tendency to blame women. In fact, a study out of England just showed that people are still blaming women when they get raped and they get attacked. Oh, she hadn't worn a short skirt. Oh, you know what? Ann Pressley was at home in her own house. When she was assaulted.
Speaking of Tennessee, I believe we have a caller on the line. Kevin, are you still on the line? You beat Jane to the punch earlier. Are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on.
We've got Jane Velez on the phone.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you doing?
Good.
What's your question, Kevin?
My question is, how would I go about getting a body of water search? Yes.
I would contact Texas EquiSearch. They're very good, and there are other private search organizations. In other words, you could ask the police. If the police haven't declared this a crime or they feel this person is a runaway, but you're convinced this person's in a body of water, call Texas EquiSearch. If they can't do it themselves, they can turn you on to another organization that can do it. And they're a good group of people, and they have connections. So you've got to get through to them. Miller is the head guy, Tim Miller. And you can find him, I'm sure, pretty easily. I think they're based in Texas.
And he also
track
has
down
an
Tim
office
Miller.
In Florida now, too.
Yeah, track down Tim Miller and say, hey, Tim, you know, I want to search this body of water.
Any other question, Kevin?
What do I do if the law enforcement won't let me get a search team down there?
Well, why are you so convinced that there is a body in that body of water?
There's a lot of reason to believe it because where my uncle went missing at, the area where he went missing at, the people that was last seen with him, down there where he was last seen at is about 2-3 blocks from the park itself, and we had a woman to help us. She's a medium, and the cadaver dogs went down there, and the cadaver dogs hit on the area where the medium told them that the bodies was, and they were supposed to send divers down there, and the law enforcement ain't doing nothing about it.
Well, you might have to go to court, and I think that Tim Miller could explain to you perhaps how that works. In other words, if you feel that they're not investigating, there are ways that you can appeal that decision. There's the local police department. There's also the state police. You can go to the state police and say, hey, here's why I feel you need to search this area. And is it private property?
No. County.
State, I believe.
Well, then they shouldn't stop you from going there. If you can get a private team together, why would they stop you? You're not going to hurt the environment there, right? You're not going to destroy it. You're just going to search.
There's been a lot of stuff going on down there, and they've pulled off from searches before down there, and it's just that they just keep making up excuses after excuses, and I've hit a lot of walls proceeding to actually get people down there to actually search, you know. I've had a search team ready to go down there and search right away, but the detective wouldn't let them do it. And there was no money involved. No, it wasn't going to cost nobody nothing.
Maybe looking, Jane mentioned, the state police, you can try that, and we'll make sure that we get a packet over to her station and all, too.
Well, the other thing is contact the media, the local media, and tell your story and say, hey, here's my story. I mean, is it a small town? They're always looking for good stories. Go to the investigative reporter in the town. And that's one way to get the police to do what they have to do. They're human beings, and they respond to public pressure. And you got to get the public pressure. Call the local newspaper. Look up a byline and call the paper and talk to a reporter that does good investigations on crime. And say, I got this story that'll knock your socks off. I'm pretty sure this guy's buried there, and they won't let me search. I think that's a good story. If I was a local newspaper reporter in one of those towns, I think I'd do that story.
We have another caller on the air. Caller from the 757 area code. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. My name is
Hi.
Gail. I
Hi,
think
Gail.
We have an old friend in common, Maxine Black from New York.
Maxine Black? Oh, okay. Cool.
From years ago.
Yeah.
I live in Virginia, and we go through here where the police falsify reports when women are attacked. I actually had a recording that was stolen from my home of the dispatcher telling the attacker what to say.
What?
Yes.
Wow, that's shocking.
It's
so the
really...
dispatcher's in cahoots with the attacker?
Yeah.
And what did this attacker do? What kind of crime did they commit?
Tried to kill someone.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, New York?
I'm sorry?
New York?
No, in Virginia.
Oh, Virginia.
Virginia.
Look, I do not immediately doubt this kind of story because what are we covering today in the news? And by the way, I love law enforcement. This is not a hit on law enforcement, but there is corruption everywhere, and you have to always look at it. We cover the story of this crazy woman from the University of Alabama, now accused of gunning down three of her colleagues, killing three, and injuring three others.
Yes.
Well, it turned out in 1986 she had shot her own brother to death.
Yes,
and,
I've been trying to find out about her background.
Yeah, well, she shot her brother to death, and then she fired the gun two other times, and she tried to commandeer a car at gunpoint, and she went to a car dealership and held up the car dealership employees demanding a gun, demanding a car. We had him on tonight, the guy who worked at the car dealership. And they let her go home with her mother. They didn't charge her with anything.
Yeah.
And then they lost the police report, and they said the police report was lost, and then, oh, they miraculously found it when the pressure was on. And they were even denying that she had held up the auto dealership, as the guy insisted, and then they found the old police report, and sure enough, there it is, plain as day, she tried to hold up the dealership. So this is shocking, because if this woman had been arrested for that crime, she might not have gone on to kill three other people, allegedly. And so there are problems with especially small-town police departments. There are different kinds of problems with big city police departments. But small-town police departments sometimes operate like a fiefdom, and they feel like they're kind of king of the castle and they can do whatever they want. And if it's a very small town, sometimes there's overlap between the law enforcement and the not-so-law-abiding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that they falsified several reports. I was the one that was attacked. And that's how I got the 911 tape.
Wow. Well, I'm so sorry, but I'm glad to hear you're okay. Are you feeling like healed from that experience, or
no? I will never heal.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. Do you do therapy?
I work with other victims.
Okay. Well, that's good.
But. I mean, I know this is a constant thing here in this town, and we can't even get the media. We'll not touch it. They're afraid of them.
Well, there are organizations that look into police corruption. There are private organizations, and maybe you need to get in touch with one of those organizations because they can do an investigation. I remember seeing a story, actually, I think it was a Dateline story, where these law students decided to pick a case of a guy who was going to be executed, and they just reopened the case and investigated and found out that somebody else had confessed to it amongst a whole bunch of people, and law enforcement just didn't really want to look at it because they had their guy, and it was easy for them to just stick with the guy that they had. So the case went all the way up to many appeals courts, and they got it thrown out, and the guy was freed. And I think the same thing could apply in your case. I don't know if it's a
they won't touch
like
it. They no one seems to want to look at it. And when I went to the state says, well, they're autonomous and they do their own investigations.
Well, is this your concern? Is that this person who attacked you is still roaming the streets?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not only that. It's that they're doing this to a lot of women down here.
So the dispatcher is still working?
Yes.
Ah.
They do.
That's a pretty scary story.
Down here, when you report domestic violence, even the doctors in the hospital are afraid of retaliation and won't report violence.
Was your attack a domestic violence attack?
No, but it was by somebody related to him.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Wow. Well, I know what you're saying. The stalking situation is very similar. This is why women, you know, this is exactly why women have to unite and become a force, because we do not have an organization. There's the Soroptimus. There's National Organization for Women. But
anything, though.
But it's up to all of us to turn these organizations into powerhouses and to mobilize. And if we really did just flex our muscle as a gender, we could shut this whole country down if we didn't like what's being done. Imagine all the women in the world not going to work. Well, imagine all the women in America not going to work for a day. Okay?
That's exactly my idea, and I tried to organize it last October, and nobody would do it.
Well, that's because we're so timid, and we still don't want to rock the boat. And we don't realize that there are plenty of ways where we could, you know, join forces as a group and make our demands known to the powers that be. And that can be done in many ways. One, electing females to public office and working for female candidates. And there are organizations that do that. And also getting involved with groups like the Soroptimus.
Have you joined yet, by the way?
No.
I'm not putting you on the spot yet. Rosie did.
Well, I thought you were going to send me, like, the application.
Oh, yeah, I didn't, did I?
No, I'm waiting. I'm ready to join, honey. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I'd love to join. And, you know, it's a great group because there's a lot of women there, and those women need to be organized.
Yeah. And
well, ma'am,
worldwide.
I'm sorry you're going through what you're going through. That really is bad. And all I can say is that
we get these small towns investigated. That I guess that's my question.
Isn't there a Justice Department, an arm
they,
of the Justice Department?
You know, we've had 22 women contact the FBI from the state of Virginia in a 24-hour period. And we were hung up on.
Really?
Yeah. The FBI
wow.
does not care.
And
you know, and you're right, they're fiefdoms. And as long as no one is willing to get out there and fight these people, because they're mob. You know? Plain and simple mob. They may not
be organized crime.
But they're mob.
Yeah, well, there is fear of the mob. That's very true. And I know that there's a lot of people who live in fear of various organized crime organizations.
Definitely.
Because they operate outside the law and they operate with impunity.
Yeah. And
wow.
I'm asking, how do we get investigations?
They love that power. Call the Attorney General in your state or the Governor's office.
Attorney Generals nowadays work for public officials. These people are public officials. They have quietly moved away from working for the public. Their job descriptions have changed.
We'll look up some stuff, and I'll post it on our site at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes, and we'll post a link up there, and we'll get the answer for you.
Well, the other thing I would say is form your own power. Get the 22 women
yeah,
and get an attorney and file suit against the city. That'll get their attention.
Definitely.
A class
now, that's a voice for justice. That's
no.
a voice for justice. We
that's
have
what
a,
you gotta
another.
Do.
I okay. I will have to speak to you when you post it on the site privately, because this gets very involved. Attorneys will not touch this because most of the attorneys are part of it.
Well, feel free and drop me an email at info@nwcat.org, and we'll get the right person to answer
and,
your question.
I'm sorry, I didn't get
nwcat.org.
cat.org.
Yes, O-R-G. We have another caller. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. We have another caller on the line from the 615. Tennessee, are you on the line? Hello? Okay. We have another caller from the 931 area code. No?
Yes. Yes.
Hi. Hi, what's your question or thought, ma'am?
Hi, Jane. This is Kathy Johnston with Angel Twins Air Search and Rescue out of Tennessee. And I just want to thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do.
We really appreciate
Kathy,
you. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. Well, and
do you have any questions for Jane, Kathy?
I really don't have any questions. I have Mr. Tudors on the line with me, though. His daughter is Tabitha Tudors, and he would like to, you know, say something.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Tudors?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Tudors. Hi.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. How are you, sir? I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're going through what you're going through.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Well, it's just I live in Tennessee, and just, you know, the April the 29th of this year, my daughter will be missing 7 years, and she turned 20 the 15th of this month.
I'm so sorry.
And the authorities here, they just, I don't know, just get fed up with their stuff. You know, you want them to communicate with you, but then they won't do it. You know, then they want to put your family through all this kind of stuff, and it gets back to the caller you talked to a while ago about Kevin, and which I talked to him because his uncle is missing, and they say that down there what he was talking about, that it could be as many as 30 bodies down there.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, they won't do nothing about it.
And are you in the same area? In other words, do you think your daughter might be one of the victims in that water?
Yes, ma'am. It's bad to say, but she could be.
And what area of Tennessee is this?
Nashville.
Wow. Your daughter disappeared under what circumstances 7 years ago?
They snatched her. Someone snatched her up at the bus stop.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you have other children?
Yes, she was our youngest one.
How many others do you have?
Two more. I have another son and another daughter.
Well, and I'm glad that you have the support of that family. That I don't know what you're going through, sir. I can't imagine. I honestly think it's the worst torture on earth to not know what happened to your own child. And so I'd like to try to do something with you. How do I get in touch with you so we can update your story?
I'll send you all the information.
Mr. Tudors, maybe, did you ever get a suspect description or anything?
No.
How about a car?
Well, there's one. At the time my daughter come up missing, it was an 11-year-old boy that said he saw her get into a red car, but then he had said something earlier, and it was a lie or something, and now the police won't take his credibility because he got in trouble about it.
Hmm.
And,
wow.
And, about 2 to 3 weeks after she came up missing, OEM, I don't know if you know what that is or not. It's like...
they're a rescue squad for the metro.
Okay.
For the city.
Okay. A rescue squad.
And they was hooked up to their boat and was going to go search the river. Then the police department down here put my daughter out as a runaway, so they had to call it off. And finally, we have convinced them after 6.5 years that she was abducted and did not run away.
Yeah, well, she was 11, right?
13. Oh, she was 13. She just turned
13. Did she ever have any history of running away?
No, ma'am.
So why would they assume that she was a runaway?
Because she was 13.
They did the same with Amber Dubois in California.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lindsey Baum.
Right. And because she was 13, they consider all 13-year-olds runaways.
Terrible. Did you ever get any leads or tips on what may have happened?
No, ma'am. We got her about 8 months after she came up missing. Her social was used in Nevada. And they told
her
us
what?
It was her social security number was used in Nevada.
Well, that's a sign right there, used in Nevada. Okay.
Then the authorities here said it was an old woman that she got her last number mixed up and just so happened it had to be my daughter's. They won't tell us who it was or anything.
We know that if that's the case, the prefix, that old woman would have had to have been out of Tennessee. And as far as the little boy that actually saw Tabitha, the witness, he had gotten in trouble a long time before this incident with Tabitha happened and cost his mom and dad a little bit of money. But his story actually matched up with everything that all of the rescue squad's dogs, all the SAR dogs, I mean, they confirmed the little boy's story. But Metro decided they weren't going to listen to it.
Wow. This is a horror story. It really is. And I would love to get all the information from Michelle, and I'll see if we can do an update. When was her disappearance? What actual day did she disappear?
April the 29th of 2003.
April 29th,
yep.
2003?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
So what we should do is to that story on April 29th. And we can do some background on it between now and then. And, get photos. Do you have any videotape of her?
Yes.
Okay. We can get all that through Michelle and try to get the story on the air. So I'm going to work with Michelle to get all these elements and try to put your story on our show issues. And I'll also let the America's Most Wanted know about it. I don't know if you've contacted them.
They know about it because I've been on the John Walsh show.
Oh, you have. Well, he's a good guy, and I'm sure he's going to try to do everything he can.
I
have no words for what you're going through. I'm so sorry, Mr. Tudors. I don't know what to say. This is why I get so depressed sometimes when I think about the world, you know, there's so much cruelty, and it's just so awful, and I'm so sorry.
Well, I'll make sure that Jane gets the information. We only have about a minute left. Do you have any other questions or comments for Jane?
No, just help however she can.
We thank you so much, Jane.
Well,
thank you
for bringing this to light, and I just, you never know. Sometimes we could do the story, and somebody might have heard or known something, or somebody who would, you know, people generally, when they do something this evil, they don't keep it a secret their whole lives. They're compelled to tell somebody.
Exactly.
And it's just like criminals visit the scene of the crime again. This is a truism because there's truth to it. They do. And So there's sometimes just putting the story on the air can have an effect and get somebody, jog somebody's memory. So I will do what I can. And again, my thoughts and prayers are with you and your family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Bo. Before we end, Jane, one last question. Your parents, you may mention in your book that they used to tell you, don't ever let anyone define you. So mm-hmm. how would you like to be defined when this chapter of your life moves on to the next page?
Well, I could just say I'm a flawed person, but I'm a person who tried to use whatever skills I have or voice that I have to help the voiceless, to help those who cannot speak for themselves.
Well, you're doing a very good job, and I was hoping that, you know, we wouldn't get you down too much, but I know that there were some families, and we've had a lot of people on the line, but again, folks need to remember, always cue the host, because I can't pick up if your hand's not up. But thank you for everyone that called in. Jane, a special thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us tonight.
Michelle, you're one of my heroes. Thank you for what you do.
Ditto to you. Ditto to you. And for everyone listening, Issues can be seen on HLN 7 nights a week. Check your local listings. And if you're interested in purchasing the book, go to Amazon.com. I want lowercase I, capital W. Our show next Wednesday, same time, same place, we'll be speaking with a domestic violence survivor in observance of National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, which is February. And love shouldn't hurt, folks. So be here next week on Voices for Justice as we speak with Annie. And I leave you with this thought again. What are you doing to make a difference in the world? $1, 1 hour, one hug. It only takes one gesture to make a difference in someone's life. So until we meet again, please be the change this week. And good night, folks. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle.